Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another Bastards of Boston Baseball game recap. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. With me for this one, Nick the Voice at Nick the Voice and Jeremy Schilling at JT Schill with two L's 20. The Red Sox salvage the series, for the lack of a better term, winning the final game of a three-game set 7-4 after dropping the first two 10-5 and 5-1. Red Sox looking quite punchless until really the end of the game and some, I guess, silly heroics from Trevor Story and then a miraculous four strikeout ninth inning by Aroldis Chapman. But I guess we shouldn't be surprised. So, Jeremy, what's your first things or what's going through your head?
Well, with regards to the games, I didn't have Sogard as the savior on my bingo card today. Yeah, I could go into a bunch of different things, your sheet of leading off, and go negative on it, but I won't do that. I was nervous coming into this game, like punchless, just bad baseball again. Felt like pre-July Red Sox. Commentary amongst the squad here in the war room was extremely negative, Chris. They're losing in this game. It looks like it could be another punchless game. And then they find a way to tie the game, take the lead, get to seven runs, which they haven't done, it feels like, in a while. And I'm back feeling a little bit more optimistic as we head into the Athletics series. So that's where I'm at. Chapman, it's like boring. He's made the ninth inning boring. You know, like he's that good. He strikes out a guy, so he has to face another guy, and it doesn't matter. It's just, he's unbelievable. I'm so glad they re-signed him. They got to find a way for a little bit more consistent offense, though. So today's win was nice, but we got to find a way to get runs across in three or four innings to find sustained success again with Roman Anthony on the shelf.
Yeah, 100%. You know, when it comes to Chapman, I actually saw a tweet just before coming on here by Scott McLaughlin at SMcLaughlin9 on Twitter. He said Aroldis Chapman becomes the third Red Sox pitcher to strike out four batters in one inning, joining Tim Wakefield and Craig Kimbrell as the only two others to do it, which is just incredible company, really cementing himself in his one season as a Red Sox so far as a bit of a Red Sox legend. I mean, in many ways, his ERA drops below one for the season right now, picking up his 29th save. It was really nice to see Whitlock go 1.2 innings as well. That was really big for him. I thought Bayo did pretty solid today, and we needed that. You know, giving up three runs in six innings isn't exactly ideal, but the fact that really there were only five base runners, you know, he maybe got a little unlucky there. The Diamondbacks were feisty this series. You know, their offense showed up when I didn't really expect it to. Their pitching staff showed up when I certainly didn't expect it to. And thankfully, it's going to be crazy to say this, but thank God for David Hamilton and Nate Eaton and Nick Sogard today, because they managed to show up and get a hit when it counted, especially Sogard with that massive double, and ultimately elevate us to win this game 7-4 when, honestly, for the first, you know, six innings, this had defeat written all over it.
Absolutely. I think for me, the big takeaway is a lot of the mistakes, that's the key word here, mistakes that the Red Sox used to make, we're now no longer the team making them. We're benefiting from them. So Jordan Lawler had multiple misplays. One went off his glove, hit his cap, threw to first. A little bit of a collision with Locklear and Connor Wong at first base made me a little bit nervous. He ends up getting taken out of the game. Narvi comes in. But, you know, a weird little bit of effects, because Sogard's in the game now, and I'm thinking, this really isn't the guy I want coming in. But you know what? It's tied, whatever. You know, what's the worst that could happen? We've had a couple bits of good luck go our way. Trevor Story should have been picked off. Somehow ends up stealing the base when the ball gets thrown at first and he's sitting there deer in headlights. But I mean, a lot of this game, people are going to say, oh, well, yeah, you won that game, but it's because of this. You know what? That's just part of baseball. Sometimes luck's going to go your way and sometimes it's not. Jordan Lawler played a really rough third base today, and the Red Sox took advantage of a lot of just bad misplays. You know, Alex Bregman not running well, not playing very well. He'll take any single, any infield hit that he can make. But at this point, you have the best closer in all of baseball since May 27th, since that crazy walk-off grand slam for Christian Yelich. One earned run since May 27th for Aroldis Chapman. He has gone almost 16 innings without allowing a hit. That is almost two perfect games. He's walked one guy. And then, as you mentioned, four strikeouts in the ninth inning, joining a very select company. So sometimes this is going to be what it takes in order to get the win. It's not always going to be pretty. The Boston Red Sox are no stranger to pretty victories, and that happens sometimes. Trevor Story is my MVP. At this point, I don't know how you don't mention him on the short list for one of your best hitters. If you're mentioning Roman Anthony, he's done. He's done for the regular season. I get the respect he's had. On a Bayo start, you've got to start winning those games too. Bayo, as far as qualified starters in the American League since I believe it was June 12th or June 10th, 2.58 ERA. The only person he's trailing, Tarik Skubal. So he's been elite, and I think that's something that you can't really downplay. So the Red Sox, while we did not win the series, are able to win a pivotal third game in this set. The wild card is still a conversation. It is not a lock. There is no team that is an absolute lock in the wild card. And the Boston Red Sox have everything to play for right now. You can't give games away. You can't do it. And on Bayo starts and Crochet starts, who has been looking a little rough as of late, we've got to win those games.
Yeah, I mean, as bad as it felt the series was going, we're still only 3.5 out of first place in the East. I understand you have to leapfrog the Yankees, but I believe they're still on the schedule, and we've been really good against them all year. You know, to a comment where there's a few people slumping that are in the middle of the lineup. The big guys that we rely on, Duran, Bregman, I think the consistency has to start from there. Duran was up late in this game, and he got ahead in the count. I think it was 3-1 or 2-1, and he just pops out to the third baseman. We got to start, and look, you don't get a hit. Baseball is kind of a funny sport where you can hit the ball hard four times and go 0-for-4. But you're still hitting the ball hard. There's signs there that you're going to be productive. A lot of weak outs, you know, and so I think it's going to be on Bregman and Duran hitting 2-3 today to get this team back on track. They got to hit in this Athletic series, and they got to find consistency through the end of the month. The pitching continues to keep us in it, but if we can't create pressure, if we can't, you know, score consistently, it's just going to be hard to win some of these games. So a comment here on the restream that I thought was pretty accurate. And I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah. I think really when it comes to this team, you know, I was just talking today, funnily enough, with someone about the team and how if we get into October in decent position, this bullpen becomes infinitely more important when you have days off, right? Having a guy like Chapman, having a guy like Whitlock, you know, assuming that like guys like Wilson and Slayton can right the ship, those guys become incredibly important in October. They give us a chance. When it comes to the offense, we just need to be more complete. Having the little guys step up, having the not so much everyday guys, guys like Romy, guys like Eaton, guys like Sogard, if those guys can continue to hit at key situations, which Romy's been doing all year, I mean, that dude's just fantastic. If Eaton and Sogard can just fill up the role, and eventually when Willie Abreu is ready to come back, whenever that is, you know, presumably taking Ollie Sanchez's spot, those guys will still be on the team in September. Now, one guy who I would love to highlight, you know, we've mentioned Bregman's struggles, we've mentioned Story's heroics, but one guy's rebound, which I think is really, really worth celebrating, is Carlos Narvaez. You know, this guy, he started to put together a couple decent games midway through August, and so far in September, he's been really good, you know, despite only having, I think, three starts in that time, making a couple pinch hit appearances, and overall, in the last 2 weeks, 15 games, he is slashing 245, 315, 429. You go back to the last seven games, he's slashing 350, 409, 650. This dude heating up is going to be so important because without Roman Anthony, we need every little bit of offensive production we can possibly squeeze out.
Yeah, speaking on Romy, I believe he had the hit against the righty up the middle to start the runs in the eighth, if I have that correct.
Yep, so, that's right.
That was a really good sign just from that player. Against lefties, it's funny. We almost expect them to have an impact hit, home run, him and Ref Schneider. Against righty, I have kind of the opposite feeling with those guys, and it was a really good sign today to see Romy get that thing going. I think it was followed by a walk, and then kind of some of the crazy stuff started happening. So good point on Romy. And here's the other thing about Romy that I love. He'll play first. He'll play second. He doesn't hurt you. In fact, yeah. He makes some good plays. I think he's a better second baseman personally. He's just super athletic. Love having him on this team. I feel like we haven't talked a bunch about him on the show, at least the episodes I've been on. But, man, he really is nails. And he's another guy that just hits the ball hard a lot.
Yeah, for me, I mean, they were talking about, there's a graphic that popped up. He's 16 for his last 36, and the breakdown of all of that, you're hitting 444 since August 28th. So I actually did the math back because I couldn't remember what the date was. So since the very last game of the Baltimore series, he's also raised his batting average from 283 to 305. So you've added 20 ticks to your batting average. And no, it's not all home runs. He's had no extra base hits. So people are going to say, oh, well, he's not doing damage. Dude, you're getting 16 hits. You're doing work. He's not drawing walks. He's struck out a handful of times, but he's knocked in six RBIs in that time. And we're talking eight games, six RBIs. To your point, Jeremy, it doesn't matter if he's playing first or second. He can play wherever he's asked to play. He's a team player. Man, it'd be awesome. Imagine like getting like a massive like multi-$100 million contract and not being willing to play multiple positions. Romy's that guy where he's willing to do that and say, okay, yeah, sure. You want me to play first? You want to play second? God forbid they ask him to play short or third, but I mean, I'm sure he would do that too. He'll do whatever he has to do for the team. I wouldn't be surprised if he's like the fifth catcher on the team too, just like the way that it goes for him. But what's the expression Terry has for the squad? It's Alex, it's Cora's platoon.
Platoon dynasty, I think.
Platoon dynasty, right. Well, Terry, if you're listening, that platoon dynasty just got you the win today. So if you're listening, I don't know if you are, we could not have done it without Nick Sogard. We could not have done it without Romy Gonzalez. Not the prettiest from Ref Schneider, but I mean, dude, all the players that people are thinking are irrelevant, or maybe not irrelevant is not the right word, but not going to get you over the line. They're the reason why that line got crossed today. So I don't know. I mean, it's not been pretty. We have six of our next nine games against the Oakland Athletics, and I believe three sandwiched in between against the Yankees. I personally have a goal. I'm not sure where you guys are at for this nine game set, but it's missing the wild card at this point depending on the series that you've got, to me would be one unacceptable. And at this point, I'm knocking on wood, but I'm saying improbable. I think worst case scenario, we're going in third seed, but I think the floor for us is the second one. Jeremy, at one point I thought I believe you mentioned possibly the division. I don't know if you're still thinking or hinting that.
I'm thinking less about the division after this series, frankly. I just note that despite losing the series, they're still kind of within shooting range if they can find a way to get hot here down the stretch. And obviously they need to leapfrog two teams, which makes it a little bit more difficult.
Of course.
But, you know, two teams you play.
Yep. That's a big key of it, too. You know, I said earlier in the month, or rather last month, that if we could just get to the Toronto series within striking distance, where if we swept that, theoretically, we would take it. And not even have to sweep, just give the guys a reason, give the guys a fire to make that series really count, sort of have a playoff preview, a playoff light experience, you know, that would be nice. And so far, despite it all, the Red Sox are still within striking distance. It is ridiculous because coming into this series, you know, versus the D-backs, I had a sweep in mind. I just didn't realize that we might be on the receiving end of it.
Right. I get it.
But thankfully, being able to at least win this last game and prevent the sweep, you know, it was an ugly series. You just got to go into Sacramento, go against the A's, and hopefully wake up a little bit. I was afraid that the A's were going to be a bit of a trap series. They might still be. Hopefully, the Diamondbacks have actually trapped us well enough to hopefully put a little bit of fire into this team and make them realize, oh, we need to really, really manufacture runs here, play smart baseball, because you can't take wins for granted.
I absolutely agree. I think at this point, with the current team and state of the team that you have right now, we are where we are because you have a lethal eighth, ninth inning. I mean, that's, for lack of a better term, that's lethal injection. You're not getting out of that. Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman have been pretty darn close perfect. Chapman has been the definition of perfect. I'm pretty sure Aroldis means just automatic at this point. As soon as you see him like warming up, you're like, crap, well, this has been fun. Why do I say that? Because for the last 3 months, that's basically how it's been. He comes into the game, he shuts you guys down, he strikes out two or three or four today, and he just doesn't care. It's just a hold my beer moment. I don't know what his regiment is. You know, like I'm thinking like Major League, is Jabu in this? I don't know. If he has a different one, I want it. Because to me, whatever he's doing, don't talk to him. Don't give him advice. Just shut your damn mouth. Let him come in and do what he's doing. That said, platoon dynasty or not, right now, that's the state of the Sox. And we're really, really close. I mean, we've got less than 20 games, if my math is serving me correct. You got the Blue Jays, 143 games. The Yankees are at 143 games. The Yankees took out the Blue Jays today. I'm thankful for that because the Blue Jays are atop. I'm not going into it right now where I just want the top team to keep winning and us to keep winning and the middle team to keep losing. If they can somehow jumble it up and, you know, give and take, like I'm all for it. Right now, I want the Yankees to keep winning. I want the Blue Jays to keep losing. I obviously want the Red Sox to keep winning as well. We're going to surge. They're going to surge. There's going to be different moments. But in the last couple of weeks of baseball, this is where you're made of. Right now, these games all matter. I know a lot of people think 162 games, these games don't matter until October. It matters now. It really does matter because the seeding is going to matter. If you don't keep winning and you don't win like 60% of your games, you're hoping for the third wild card spot. Because if Seattle gets hot and Texas, I don't know, finds Jesus and they don't lose, you're in trouble. And we can't afford to be in trouble.
So one more thing on the game that I want to bring up before we move on. Why in the hell is Zach Kelly pitching in the seventh inning? So I'm thinking, you know, I've been kind of doing the kids thing and I missed a portion of yesterday's game. But Whitlock came in and Slayton was warming up in the ninth next to Chapman in case we got to four runs. So he was available. Does anybody have any insight there? Like, I don't need to see Zach Kelly in high leverage innings late in the game. Like if Slayton's available, Whitlock's available, and Chapman obviously is going to pitch ninth, why is he in the game there? And I don't want to go negative in light of a win, but like that was the one thing from a managerial perspective that confused me was that.
I think for me personally, it was just, you've been using a lot of the same names for a little bit. It's an opportunity to give Weissert a day off. Steven Matz, I don't know if I trust him in that situation, so I don't want him pitching in the seventh just yet. Hicks obviously isn't here. He's on the IL for just not being able to throw strikes and hitting batters. I think it's just an opportunity. You have to give some of these guys that you might not expect the seventh inning just to see. And at that point, you had already lost two games. So possibly get, you know, I get it. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. I'm with you. But
I just disagree that if Whitlock and Slayton are available, that he should have gotten the seventh.
Do you want somebody like Whitlock to throw two innings for the remainder of the season in a game?
No, he's proven he's not as effective in the second inning.
He's not.
And that's why not until the ninth did it dawn on me that Slayton was available. And then why would Kelly get the seventh? That's what confused me. And look, I'm not Nick, and I'm going to give you a chance here to weigh in, but I'm not a Cora hater. And so he's done some things in the last year that I've liked a little bit less than I have in the past, but that was a game where we had to win today. Like the snowball effect of getting swept in Arizona, it could be a serious problem, not to mention, you know, the loss in the standings, but it just was a very, and look, hindsight is we win the game and it didn't kill us, but he wasn't going to get three outs in the seventh inning from what I saw.
Yeah, that's not unfair. You know, the only thing that I can really say in defense of the decision is, you know, looking at Justin Slayton's last outing, had that really bad blow up just the other night. Zach Kelly, you go back, I think it was 4 days ago. It was versus the Guardians. He had that four-inning, beautiful, beautiful four-inning performance. And, you know, I know that some of Zach Kelly's, like, metrics have been a little better in the major leagues this season than his surface numbers. I sort of get giving him a chance, but I agree with you. I mean, it was a blow-up tonight. I don't necessarily think it was, like, a huge misstep, but it is something that totally bit us.
Here's the thing, really quickly. Weissert pitched game 1 and 2. Slayton got his claw cleaned in the first one, if I'm not mistaken. That was the crazy four-run performance.
Yeah,
and then Murphy wasn't. And Murphy wasn't good. So my mind was, okay, cool. You fast forward one day, Wilson comes out, he strikes out three. He's done it in sub 20 pitches. You could have him pitch again, or you give Kelly a shot who hasn't pitched in the series yet. It's just, I think the mindset of keep your bullpen as consistently healthy as possible, keep them fresh. I mean, you don't want to burn anybody out. We've already seen what happens to Bernardino when he goes out. We've seen what happens to Weissert when he goes out too frequently. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, you're up 4-3. Hopefully you don't lose the lead. Okay, we lost. It's 4-4. But maybe we have some magic in the last two innings to just generate a run. And then if you have Whitlock and Chapman, I feel pretty good for two innings with those guys if you have a one-run lead, you know? So, I mean, even those two guys, I mean, I don't want Chapman to pitch two innings. I like you mentioned, Jeremy, I'm 100% aligned with you. We are aligned. I do not want to be, you know, living on the realm of Whitlock pitching two innings because he can't do it either. Anything else you just want to add to this one? All right, so we have a very important series against the Sacramento Athletics, for the lack of a better term. ESPN just calls them the Athletics. They actually don't mention the city here. So Crochet is going to be pitching game one against Luis Morales, who has been fire for this team. And by fire, I mean literally has only had one performance where he is allowed more than one earned run. But he's going against our best pitcher, who has been scuffling a little bit. That said, you have the best pitcher in the American League, even with a scuffle performance as of late, against Luis Morales. Who you guys taking game one?
You know, as good as Morales has been, he is a rookie. You know, he's been good, but it feels like the Sox, we've been pretty good at showing up rookies over the last several years. You know, you got to bet on Crochet here. I'm going with the Red Sox in game one.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, Morales' numbers are insane. 0.99 whip, 30 Ks in 28 innings pitched, only 11 walks, 1.59 ERA, and he's 3-0. He doesn't even have a picture on the ESPN profile yet, so maybe ESPN should get on that if this kid's going to be that good. For me, this is the whole game is about Crochet. Is he going to bounce back and be who he's been all year, or was his last start where he gave up four bombs an indication that he's, you know, as a lot of people have said, you know, far exceeded his previous innings limit and all these things? If Crochet goes back to who we think he's going to be, he should pitch deeper in the game than Morales, right? And that gives us a better chance to win the game. And so I'm concerned with the way they're playing, but I got to take the Sox on Crochet Day.
Yeah, man, this is the Athletics. This is not the F around and find out team. Like, we don't have to play and test things out, and you don't have to go with advanced analytics here. Just play baseball. That's it. You have Garrett Crochet going. Your American League Cy Young for 2025, very good chance, right? We talked about this on the last show, Jeremy, you and I believe, maybe Terry was with us, I can't remember. But if you're Tarik Skubal and you play for Detroit and you don't have 20 wins, that says something. If you're Garrett Crochet and you're pitching for the Red Sox and you don't have 20 wins, I can kind of understand it. You know, you've got the platoon dynasty, as Terry likes to call it. The Tigers don't really have a platoon dynasty. They have like an absolute juggernaut of a team there. Game two is a little bit different, and I think I'm going one way here. I think this is going to be Dustin May's get right game against Jeffrey Springs. I don't know how you guys have game two. Who do you guys have winning game two?
Oh, this could be an ugly one. This is one that I think is going to be a high scorer, you know, especially considering that minor league ballpark that they're playing in. What's funny, though, is that looking at Jeffrey Springs' splits, he's really good on the road. He is not good at home. His ERA is about 1.1 higher at home than it is away. I think this is going to be a slugfest. I would not be surprised if the Athletics take game two here. I hope Dustin May, you know, gets right. But you know what? I think I'll give it to the A's on this one.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm taking the over. Maybe the Sox over, by a field
runs.
Goal. Yeah, maybe the Sox by a field goal 10-7.
Okay.
Springs being a left-handed pitcher means Ref Schneider and Romy are going to be in the lineup. I like that. I have no expectation that May is going to be efficient in this game at all. I don't see him as a viable starting pitcher on this team. I really think he should be in the bullpen where he can max leverage one inning with his stuff and try to get three outs. I hope that this is his last start, whether it's a good one or a bad one for the Red Sox. As far as picking the game, honestly, I have no idea. I'll take the Sox because they're playing for something, but I don't think that necessarily means you're going to win the game.
I think it's going to be Dustin May winning it. I mean, I think I'm the only true Dustin May supporter on here. And with less than 20 games left, I can't buck the trend. I'm just going to go with it. It's an AL West team. He's from the NL West. He should have some familiarity with Oakland. You're not that far from Los Angeles where you used to pitch before you were injured almost every year. And that's unfortunate, but I want to see Dustin May succeed. I would love to see him strike out 10 over six innings. That would just be just amazing for me for so many reasons. Cause I get to say, told you so, instead of being told you so. I just want him to do well. And then game three, we've got Tolley going up against a TBD. If I have to give a game to Oakland, I'm going to give it to them on this one. So I'm just going to say Oakland wins game three, but we finally win our first series in a little bit is what it feels like. You know,
that third game to me, it's all about Tolley bouncing back and seeing if we have something we can use in the playoffs or not. That's all that game means to me. How else are we supposed to evaluate? We don't know who's going to be starting. So right, Tolley gets roughed up. Let's see how he bounces back. He's a young kid pitching in college last year. If we think he is who I think he is, he's going to pitch well and give you a chance to win, but we'll see.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see. Hopefully Tolley can get himself right here. A couple of interesting things that I just noticed in the minor leagues is the Woo Sox did have a doubleheader today. Kyle Harrison only pitched the first inning and came out. Not sure if it had something to do with his ankle or if the Sox are maybe looking at maybe calling him up again in a little bit, you know, maybe next week. But also very interestingly enough is another name, Connelly Early, was supposed to pitch in game two, and he was pulled in favor of Isaac Coffey. Maybe in lieu of Harrison, early could be a guy who we see coming up to the Sox at some point. Maybe not as soon as this next series, but maybe later this month. Who knows?
Wow. Okay. I did not know that. So this is, okay. So there was an insider apparently stating that there's a chance, and we're not sure if this is true or not, that Kyle Harrison's promotion to the Red Sox was not happening. But I don't think you have anything to lose by giving him a shot, especially against the Oakland series, whether it be in this, you know, this three game set, which not expected given the three game starters that we have already. I don't think I want to give him New York for his first taste of the AL East in Boston, but the second Oakland series, why don't you bring them both up? I mean, Terry doesn't have a platoon dynasty if you don't have platoon players playing and pitching. So honestly, let him have it. Let him have them both and watch them both shove, and it would be amazing because you can't really talk crap if all of them are dominating. And that being said, you know, Chris, who is one of the group, if the Red Sox sweep Oakland, I hope that that allows you to sleep a little bit better at night. I'm concerned about you, my friend. I hope that everything is well. I really don't want anything sad to happen. That being said, obviously, I'm just joking. But like, we're going to have to win a couple of big games here. And, you know, we've shown New York that we can put them to sleep and tuck them in at night. We've done it really well this year. Oakland, I'm just not scared. Not scared of that team. Anything else you just want to add?
You got to beat the non-playoff teams left on your schedule. It has to happen. So go Sox.
Yeah.
Go
Sox. And my last comment, you know, I'll just say the Athletics, just watch out for some of those guys because they got some scary hitters on that team. Watch out for guys like Kurtz, Soderstrom. I mean, those dudes can do damage. Respect those young guys, you know. Don't pitch them recklessly. Treat them with respect and hopefully go out there and just play good baseball and win.
Yeah, I'm fingers crossed, my friend. Go Sox. And for those that are looking to check out any great content, bastardsofbostonbaseball.com is where you can go for daily articles. Everyone have a great one. Take care.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.